Hey everybody, Mark Ashton here, coming to you with the Accelerator that comes from August 3rd, 2 Kings 23 and 2 Chronicles 35, Jeremiah 22 and 26. I want to give you, as we head into this Accelerator, as we go through the daily Bible in chronological order, I want to give you a little bit of a snapshot into what the world of international affairs was looking like at this time. Because there's a number of players that you'll want to know exactly who they are and where they fit in international affairs in order to be able to get what's happening. Now, you'll probably remember that this is the Mediterranean Sea. Down here, we've got the Nile River that feeds into the Mediterranean Sea. And the nation of Israel is just a tiny little nation that's right in this strip of land right here, okay? This is Israel that we're paying attention to. Now, if you keep on looking through the Middle East, you've got down here in this corner, this is the Persian Gulf, the Euphrates River, the Tigris River shooting up from there. And there's three huge empires that you want to be paying attention to at this point. Number one empire is down here. This is Egypt. Okay? And Egypt is a rising power. They're coming into power right now. Pharaoh Necho is in charge at this time, and they're gaining momentum. Then you've got up here in the north, you've got Assyria. And the capital of Assyria is Nineveh. And up there in Assyria, they're the ones who came in and took over the northern tribes, remember, and they scattered them all over the place. Well, Assyria is on the decline at this point. Largely, the turning point was Hezekiah's victory in Isaiah 37. You might remember that. And they are on the decline. They're not out, but they are down at this point. And then down here, you've got Babylonia. Okay? And Babylonia is also on the rise. They're becoming more and more powerful. And what will be happening very soon is that the leaders of the Babylonian Empire will be matching up with the Medes and the Persians, and they'll all surround Assyria, and Assyria will no longer be a world power. But right now, Israel, you can see, is caught right in the middle of this. And because this area right here is all wasted desert, Babylonia, Assyria, Egypt, they'd all like to have Israel because it's a great travel route to get from Africa to Asia, and then up to Europe. It's just a key linchpin place to travel through. Everybody wants to own that territory. Well, this is the milieu that's happening as we read through our passage that we have today. In our reading today, we hear how the great King Josiah dies. Well, he didn't mean to, but he did die. He went off to battle. And one of the things I find noteworthy about Josiah is that when he went out to battle, he went with his troops in disguise. In other words, Josiah wasn't trying to be protected. Josiah was a true and real leader. All the way from the beginning of when he was quite young, Josiah was leading the forces and doing an amazing job with that. But what that did is it put him at risk. And Josiah, who is always willing to take a risk for the Lord, well, he winds up going to battle and taking an arrow and dying. A sad end to a great king. Well, the people who, Jeremiah 22 is a snapshot of what Jeremiah was saying to those kings and to the nation of Judah just after Josiah's reign. To Shalom, who is the son of Josiah, also known as Jehoaz, meaning the Lord will help, who ruled for a few months after Josiah died in the Battle of Megiddo, Jeremiah gives some words of wisdom. Shalom was taken into exile down into Egypt, and Jeremiah's message to him and concerning him is, don't weep for the dead too long. Don't mourn his loss, Josiah's, but Israel should weep bitterly for Shalom, his son, who Jeremiah says, who is exiled because he will never return or see his native land again. He'll die in the place where they have led him captive. You may remember that he was deposed by Pharaoh Necho of Egypt and taken to Egypt in chains. Jehoiakim was placed on the throne then by the Egyptian ruler, and we'll read more about him in the days to come. All right, so now Josiah's gone, Shalom's gone, Jehoiakim is now in place. Well, to Jehoiakim, Jeremiah brings a strong word from the Lord. The response of the people, an almost unbelievable amount of hostility from the religious leaders. Jeremiah was challenging their ministries, and they felt it. Reading this interaction between he and the religious leaders brings two points of application to mind. One, it should encourage us to hold on, even if we're the only voices that are speaking out for God, and to keep on speaking. I'm reminded of the story of Martin Luther when we come to this place. When he was called by the entire religious and civil establishment of his day and told to recant his views that challenged everything that the Roman Catholic Church had been teaching. The Hollywood version of what happened on that day is that Luther strode in with a magnificent confidence, even arrogance, into the great hall. In a booming voice, he cried out to all those when asked to recant, "Here I stand." He was convinced by the word of Scripture or by the light of evident reason that my position was wrong. "Here I stand, I can do no other," he said. Well, what really happened is that after a great deal of wrestling and personal torment, being called into that forum and told to recant and asked for his answer, well, there was a long silence at that point. Finally, Luther's lips were moving, but no one could hear what he said. When he was challenged to speak up, he said, "Could I have 24 hours more to think about this?" He wasn't sure. He almost recanted. How grateful we should be that Luther on the next day came back and said, "Unless I am convinced by Scripture or by the light of evident reason, I cannot recant. Here I stand. I can't do anything else. God help me. There may well come a day when you too will need that kind of fortitude." Well, the second point that I want to make is that this mob scene is an important reminder of how easy it is to get nationalistic fervor and patriotism confused with righteousness. When Jeremiah spoke out of the judgment of God against the nation, it offended the nationalistic fervor and feelings of the people of Jerusalem. Had it not been for the careful intervention of a few cautious officials, Jeremiah may have been toast. But part of what got Jeremiah into so much hot water with the people was an inability on their part to separate righteousness from nationalism. Remember, they're being threatened on all three sides, and them staying together as a nation was very important to the people who Jeremiah was speaking to. Our situation with Jeremiah resolved itself in part by the fact that Micah the prophet had said many of the very same things before him and had gone unpunished. Now that Micah was widely recognized and revered as God's prophet, how could they judge Jeremiah for saying the same things that Micah had said? It's interesting to note that while we have seen allusions and even quotations from one prophetic book in another already, the quote from Micah's book, which is found in Jeremiah 26:18, is the only instance of which I'm aware in which an Old Testament prophet quotes another Old Testament prophet and names him as the prophet that he is quoting. Well, my exhortation to you today at the end of this is that you would stand strong. Hold on, even if you're the only voice speaking against a myriad of voices. Hold on tight to God, follow Him well, and don't confuse righteousness with nationalistic fervor like the Israelites did. This is Mark Ashton wishing God's blessings on you today as you continue to read through the Bible in chronological order. God bless you.